As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
The culture is the culture. It's 4 to 6A to B, competitive excellence, and the brotherhood. The plan to win has never changed. So the culture here and the plan to win is always going to be here at Ohio State.
Welcome back to 4 to 6 with A and B, your Ohio State podcast brought to you by The Athletic. This is Bill Landis, joined by Ari Wasserman. We're doing a mailbag show. We haven't done one. I don't know the last time we've done one, but we're doing an all mailbag show. This show is all your questions, and all you guys are super negative. These questions were a downer, a lot of them anyway, but we're going to go through them anyway. Ohio State is in the college football playoff. They're playing Clemson. Seems like something folks should be excited about. Just seems more and more like people are angry. So we're going to answer a few of your angry questions, starting with this one from, if you want to submit questions for future episodes, subscribe to The Athletic, theathletic.com/4-6. Get you a 2-for-1, gift for you, gift for a friend, and you can ask us questions.
Bill, I have to say before we get started, for everybody listening right now, my voice might be a little bit subdued. We're recording this at 5:55 a.m., and I'm in Las Vegas in a hotel room. And I went out last night with some friends, and I'm not feeling too hot. And the funniest thing in the world, Bill always sends me these questions beforehand so I can review them and be prepared and ready to talk. And, like, I rolled over. I'm not feeling well for reasons you guys can imagine. And I opened my phone, and the first thing I saw was, is Justin Fields broken? And I was like, so this is the show today. This
good morning.
This is what we're doing.
Good morning. It's Justin Fields.
I didn't mean to like ruin the anticipation for future questions, but like that was this, and then it was just like all these questions were all not as quite as intense as that one, but it seems to me that like we're asking questions about a team that's about to go play in the Capital One Bowl after losing three games. And, like, I don't know if it's just the bad performance against Northwestern, which we'll get into, or the fact that they're the number 11 team in the AP poll, or what's going on. But, like, guys, we're 2 weeks away from watching them play Clemson again, and, like, this is supposed to be the time where you're excited to see what they can do. And there's just overall sentiment of we're doomed and they suck. And it's just, like, I don't know where that came from.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's just the year weighing on people. I didn't intentionally pull all of the negative questions. That's just the tone of all of them. But as we're going through the show, I'll scroll through this, and if I find one that seems like it can level out the emotion of things a little bit, I'll grab that one too. But let's start with this one from Ryan C. He says, is this a game of chess that Dabo Swinney is playing by ranking Ohio State 11th in the coaches poll? He knew Ohio State would be in. He knew Ohio State would see it, so why would he do it? He knew, or he was well aware, that Ohio State would be ranked third after Saturday night. And for anybody who is not caught up, Dabo Swinney, who claims to fill out his own ballot in the coaches poll, put Ohio State 11th, the only coach who had Ohio State outside of the top 10. And also, I missed this, on ACC Network, he was being asked about the game, and he said something to the effect of, like, oh, well, the prep will be easy because we only have to watch six games. It's like he keeps doubling down on this idea. What do you think Dabo's doing here?
I don't know that he is doing anything other than continually trying to prove the point that he thinks that a team that has only played six games doesn't deserve to be into the playoff. And yesterday, I was bored at the airport, and I was reading Twitter, and I sent out a tweet that got a lot of people fired up, but I'm going to read the tweet. I wonder if Clemson went 6-0 because it had games canceled due to COVID-19, what Dabo's perspective on whether his team belongs in the college football playoff would be. And, like, I think that, like, we can have a discussion all day about whether or not Ohio State should be in the discussion after only playing six games, or how weird it is that they're 6-0 and everybody else has played 9, 10, 11 games in the playoff field. I get that, and I understand that it could be an advantage, or maybe it won't. I don't know. But the continued behavior, I think, is just a way to assert himself and, like, his thought process that Ohio State shouldn't be in it to begin with. And, you know, I don't understand the point of doing it after the fact, because he knew Ohio State would see it. This would become a thing. And, you know, I don't know if you want to fire up your opponent or do what he did, but this isn't something that just started, like, yesterday. This is something he's been saying for, what's it been, 3-4 weeks now? Mm-hmm. And I think preemptively he was doing it because he was trying to put himself in the best position, or his program in the best position, because everything coaches say is to stump for their program. And if he said that, he was, A, giving his team a chance to potentially still make it if they lost Notre Dame twice, and B, I think everybody knows that Clemson would rather play Texas A&M or Notre Dame or somebody else other than Ohio State in the first round, because this is all about seeding and path. And Ohio State's not coming off a very good game right now. And as you're all well aware, it's not easy to be optimistic. But this is kind of reminds me a little bit of last year when Ohio State could have had the number one seed, and they got the two seed instead and had to end up playing Clemson instead of playing Oklahoma and advancing to the national title game and being four quarters away from winning a national championship. Like, Clemson is clearly the number two team, and I'm not saying they shouldn't be ranked there, but they have a really tough first round out. I mean, they have a tougher first round out than the team they just beat. Than Alabama against the team that they just beat. So, you know, I don't know. If you're one of the big three programs, the playoff is about trying to get to the national championship, but you don't want to play any other big three. You'll play anybody else, but the other, I mean, Ohio State would rather play anybody else in the world but Clemson and Alabama in the first round. So I think it was, like, all, like, laying the groundwork. And then now he's just doubling down. I don't know why he's doubling down, but he seems very passionate about this subject that he would feel very differently about if the shoe were on the other foot.
It's interesting to me that he's saying these things, because, like, if he and I guess on one hand he's, like, establishing an excuse already if they do lose. But also, if they lose and all you've talked about for 4 weeks is how that team shouldn't have been in the playoff, I feel like it's making it look even worse for you. Like, shouldn't you be pumping them up now? Like, we're past this point. Maybe you didn't think they should have gotten in, but they got in.
Aren't we in, like, the bullshit the other team is the best team I've ever seen phase?
Right,
I don't know. Everybody saw the leaked Ryan Day video from the locker room, and I know that he's excited, and it was awesome.
Word of Mario.
But also, I don't know. He seems really, really fired up, more so than I've ever seen him before. And granted, we wouldn't have seen him in that setting, so maybe that's a regular thing. But this is the game that Ohio State's been waiting 365-plus days to play. And I think being 7.5-point underdogs, and I looked up at the board at the sportsbook at Caesars Palace last night, and I looked it up, and it was set plus 8 or plus 7.5. I'm like, they're giving two scores to this team? I don't know. Is Ohio State about to lose 31-0 again? Or, like, is this going to be a really good football game? Because I don't know that I would lay two scores.
I was watching College Football Nerds on YouTube. I watch their preview sometimes, and one of the guys on there picked Clemson to win, like, 41-24, and I was like, is this where this game is going?
It's making me wonder, like, what we're supposed to be thinking about this, because I've, like, you know, I think right now if we had to make a pick, and we'll wait another week or two going into the game before we do that, but I'd pick Clemson right now. I don't know that I think that Ohio State's going to win the football game, but I also don't think they're going to get their doors blown off. Like, two scores?
Two scores is a lot. Like, I don't. Ohio State, yeah, I don't know. I still think
they score
Ohio,
a lot.
I still think Ohio State's good. I don't know. Maybe I'm. I get. It feels like I'm in a minority at the moment, but I still think Ohio State's good. Is
they're number 11, Bill.
That's don't true. They are that. Number 11.
It's 2-11.
You have been covering Ohio State longer than I have, and like paying attention to the program longer than I have. Like, ranking villains for Ohio State football, like, is that like, where's Dabo? Because to me, he's like at the top. And, like, people hate this guy.
Well, the number one villain from the 10 years is back. Brett Bielema is now the head coach at Illinois, but he had Wisconsin teams kind of humming there in the late 2000s, 2010s or 2010s. How do you say that if you want to talk about, like, the early 2010s?
The early aughts.
Is that, like, the correct? I don't even know what that means.
People make shit up. I don't know.
Yeah, okay. And he used to say stuff in press conferences. Now it's been 7-8 years since he used to say it, but I remember he used to say very antagonistic things about Ohio State in news conferences, and, like, Ohio State fans hated that guy. And it's like, this one, I think, is even worse because it's coming from somebody who's kicking your ass.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't know if that's a permanent thing. It doesn't have to be. We could be talking a whole new viewpoint about what this emerging rivalry is if Ohio State wins this football game on January 1st. But right now, Dabo has beaten Ohio State in the playoff twice. Last year, it looked like Ohio State was going to get back over the hump and advance back to the national championship game. And then a few weird things happened in that football game, and Clemson was victorious again. And now here you are as a 7.5-point favorite ranking your opponent. It's just a lack of respect for your opponent going into the thing. It's just like, I don't know that there's been a coach that's been intentionally, and sometimes I don't even know if Dabo's intentionally trying to poke. I don't know if he's trying to be antagonistic about it. And, like, sometimes it's just like, of course he is, and then other times it's like, I just think that's how he thinks right now. And
well, he doesn't. I don't know. It'd be interesting to maybe at some point I'll try to ask Grace Rainer or Clemson Raider about this. Like, I don't think Dabo talks about, like, Alabama this way. He talks spicy about Ohio State quite a bit.
yeah, I know. And I thought that, and tell me if you think this, Bill, but I was listening to the day news conference that you guys were on, or it was one of the, it was either a Zoom call or whatever, the Zoom call after the game, but somebody asked Ryan Day about, like, whether Ohio State's positioning in the playoff was and how he compares himself to other teams or some context of that sort. And Ryan Day said, I don't want to talk about other programs because we have enough to talk about ours in terms of, like, things that they can improve on.
Right.
And, like, I think that that was almost a jab at the coaches who talk about his. Like,
did you
get that too?
Yeah,
or was
absolutely.
Was he being diplomatic or was he just saying, shut the hell up about Ohio State?
No, he was telling Dabo and Jimbo to shut the hell up, worry about your own house, stop looking at mine, kind of stuff. Which is like, I think he's well within his rights to say that. But as someone who, like, likes college football and the absurdity of it, like, I kind of like that Dabo put Ohio State 11th in his coaches poll when we're talking about it because it's so dumb.
Yeah,
like, it's fun.
The thing about it is that, like, everybody is so personally offended by it, but it's just like, I've said this on the show 100 times, just bring back the art of shit talking.
Yeah, right.
Like, what it makes the game more intriguing. Like, in this game is the best college game of the year. It's going to be the best, most anticipated college game of the year, not only because you have two traditional powers playing in a playoff setting that, you know, will take you to the national title if you win, but Ohio State storylines from last year with Sean Wade and some of the things that went wrong for them in that game, and Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence, you got that last college matchup before they play against each other for years in the NFL. And then, of course, now you have all these undertones of Ryan Day, you know, leaked videos from the locker room that a player somehow decided to go live with, and
explains a lot. It explains a lot. Like,
have we heard anything more about, like, what the? I mean,
no. Ryan Day is supposed to have a. We're recording this on Tuesday morning. Ryan Day, I think, is going to end up talking on Wednesday. I'm sure he'll get asked about it. I'm sure he won't answer the question. But it's like, why doesn't DeMario play? Oh, because he's the guy who streams the head coach from the locker room after the Big Ten title game.
Yeah, I'm not so much like, if anybody gets offended about Ryan Day using foul language in the Big Ten championship locker room after winning and going to the playoff, then you need a new hobby.
Yeah, for sure.
Because guess what? That's how these guys probably talk 100% of the time when they're at practice.
Yeah.
And two, I thought it was awesome. Like, if you're an Ohio State fan, you watch watch it, you get fired up. Like, yeah, we're going to win. Yeah. You know, I don't know. I think it's great. And maybe Clemson fans will be like, oh, yeah, they're going to kick our ass. We'll see about that. And then Ohio State fans are like, oh, we're 11th. We're going to see about that. And it's like, yeah, that's awesome.
Great.
Like, that's the best thing about the sport. And I wish that everybody didn't water it down. I wish that we didn't make a joke earlier on the press conference about how coaches enter game week and praise the other team like they're playing in the Super Bowl and the other team could beat the Patriots. Like, I wouldn't it be great if coaches were like, huh, so what do you think of their defensive line? Well, it's actually pretty weak and it sucks. We're going to run all over it.
Yeah, right.
Like, and I know you don't really have much to gain for that, but like if I were a team like Bama or Clemson or somebody like that, like if I were Dabo and I really wanted to let it loose, like if I were for Nick Saban and I was playing Vanderbilt and somebody's like, so what do you think of their skill position? It's very, very bad and we're going to have 600 yards of offense against them.
Yeah.
Like what do you – you're the owner of the sport. Do it. It's fun. Right. We're going to kill them. They suck.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Wouldn't it be funny if a coach said they suck?
Yeah. What do you think of Ohio State? No, they suck.
We play fantasy football. When I lose, the opponent says I suck at it. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, you're right. Yeah. You know, it's sports. It's fun. Like, I don't know.
So, on this topic, then, I didn't send you this question, but I want to pull it out of the queue here. From Quinton M., would simply beating/upsetting Clemson be considered a win for the season, even if Ohio State goes on to lose to Alabama? Or is it still natty or bust? Like, would the sweet revenge of Clemson still make this season feel good, even if they don't win the national title?
You know, winning a national championship, I think, is an interesting... Was this in the queue, or did you get, like, a...
No, I pulled it, yeah. I didn't send it to you, but it's in the...
Yeah. Oh, okay. So we're pulling out some interesting questions that aren't negative, mm-hmm. but kind of negative, because the assumption is that
they're going to lose.
We're already playing a consolation prize. But I do, like, I don't know, Ohio State's never been in a position where coming in second is good, and winning a national championship is what you want to do when Justin Fields is on your roster for the last game or two. You know, so I don't know that I would say that it was a great success, but I think it'd be a great season if they beat Clemson. And, like, the only thing we ever talk about in terms of the big three is the positioning right now. And last year it seemed for a minute that Clemson was going to overtake Alabama or had overtaken Alabama as the number one program in college football. Alabama was not in the playoff. Clemson beat Ohio State in the first round, and granted LSU won the national championship, but in the overarching rankings of program, you know, you have individual playoff rankings and you have the AP poll, but I have, like, program rankings in my brain, and those don't move quite as frequently. I think it takes years for those to move, but right now I would say Clemson 1, Alabama 2, but, like, I think at the end of the year it's probably going to switch back because mm-hmm. Alabama just signed the number one class in the country again and is the overwhelming favorite to win the national title. So for that sake, like, I think if Ohio State beat Clemson, it puts itself back and firmly in the discussion of being on the level playing field with the team that probably came into the year as the number one program in America. So how could that be a failure? But the thing that you would say to that is that if Ohio State does do that, then that means that they lost in the national championship game, and that really sucks for them. So, yep. Like, I don't know how to balance those two things, but I think beating Clemson would be a great success for Ohio State. I can't imagine what it would be like for Fields and Olave and all the guys that have redemption stories and a lot of these guys who are leaving after this year if they were to lose to them again.
Yeah.
And maybe they will. And it's just like that would just be a real kick in the knackers, you know?
Real kick in the knackers, bro.
Yeah. You know, but like, yeah, I think if somebody were to say before the year you lost in the national championship game to Alabama, I just feel like you just kind of like, yeah, that's the sport, you know. I don't know, like, yeah. that's what it is.
I do.
You know, you're not.
I think on some level, just getting here is a success. I don't say that to, like, so that when/if they lose, you can just sort of explain it away like it doesn't matter. Like, it still matters, but, like, getting to the playoff is no small accomplishment, especially in a year like this. And if they were to lose a national title to Alabama, Notre Dame, whoever, it would suck. But man, if they beat Clemson, That's going to feel really good for this team. Like, Ohio State's never beaten Clemson before. Clemson's knocked them out of the playoffs twice, beat them in the Orange Bowl in 13. Everyone hates Dabo. I think he's public enemy number one for Ohio State fans. I think Justin Fields would love to beat Trevor Lawrence in a heads-up battle. All the guys you talked about getting redemption, I think, like, would love to get that, even if it didn't come with a national title after it. Like, it would be one of the sweetest wins Ohio State's had in its history to beat this Clemson team with all the build-up to this game. And, like, if they
do
lose,
you worry though that if they do win though that they will like have all the gas out of the tank for the next one?
No, I don't think so. I don't think you run out of gas when you go in the national title game. I think maybe there's an emotional component to it for sure. Like, they are really on edge, like want to smash this team if they can. But I don't know. Like, I don't think they could like beat Clemson and then go into the national title game and like lose by 30 to Alabama. Maybe they could.
Did you think that Ryan Day's leaked video was a key into that sense of urgency or that desire or that, like, you know, like...
It was funny. He was like, just give us one game. I was someone that raised my hand, but like, Ryan, you got to win two.
Yeah, yeah. You know, like, I don't know. I'm going to tell you a quick story. When I was in college, I was, like, the best player at NCAA football in my dorm.
Nice.
And we had an NCAA tournament that was sponsored by EA Sports on Arizona's campus. And if you won, you, like... You know, remember those Madden Nation games mm-hmm. where they send you and you have a chance to win like $50,000? And there was a guy that had been talking shit to me all week who had beat me once in my dorm. And like, I had to play him in the final round because we both made it to the championship. And I've never been more like anxious to do something or to win something. Like, every time I carried the football in a video game, like, I was afraid the computer was going to screw me and I was going to fumble the football. I ended up losing on a Hail Mary, which is still something that haunts me to this day. But, like, you get to this point where it's like you're grinding your teeth that you cannot lose this game. And I don't know if that was a good analogy or not, but, like, I was, like, sweating every single play, every minute. There was nothing I would do to not lose that game. And I feel like Ohio State is in that position right now. Not that they weren't when they won the national championship or went to the playoff in the subsequent year, but, like, I don't know if this is just – the storyline's taking over in my brain, or if this is Ryan Day's behavior in the locker room, or if it's just a weird pandemic year, or the desperation from the beginning of the year when they thought that the Big Ten season was going to get canceled. But I feel like at this point right now, Ohio State's never been more desperate to win a football game.
Yep.
And I don't know if you could say they weren't more desperate to beat Bama or to win the national title. That might not be fair. But like, just from a desperation standpoint of like what it means and who the opponent is, can you think of another one that might stick in their side like a thorn like this one? I don't know that there is one.
No, I think the desperation is inherent in all those things you talked about. There's an added element to this one, given the history between these two programs and the fact that the head coach on the other side can't stop talking about you in a negative way. Yeah, no, this is different. Like, and do you bring that up to wonder whether or not like that could be a detriment to Ohio State? Like, they're too on edge, too amped up for this?
I think that there's no such thing as too amped up.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Unless it turns into pressing, and that could manifest in a lot of ways. That could mean Justin Fields throwing a ball into the window that he's not supposed to because he's desperate to get a first down, or Ryan Day, as you talked about on the last podcast, being overly aggressive. I mean, there's ways that can happen, but in terms of motivation, you're talking about a team that looked like dog shit in the Big Ten championship game for three and a half quarters almost, mm-hmm. and if they need to like something like Clemson talking garbage to like get on point and put themselves in a position where they practice as hard as they can every single day and rep as hard as they can and get on the same page in order to be the crispest version of itself when they play in that game, then this is almost a blessing, I think, because there is some question in my mind about whether or not Ohio State can transform from the thing that we saw on TV against Northwestern to a team that can beat Clemson in 13 days. Maybe this is the thing that I think could maybe be the catalyst for that change.
Yeah.
Also, I don't know that I still think that they can do that. I have doubts about that, and we'll never know until we watch it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm of the mind that this all works for Ohio State. Like, I think – I said it on the last show that I think we're going to – whatever the best version – whatever the best attainable version of Ohio State is, having only played six games, having 12 days or 13 days, whatever it is, to prepare for the game, I think we're going to see that. there's just no guarantee that that's good enough to beat Clemson, especially if Clemson's playing its best football, because I think most people who follow that program would say that the ACC championship was the best they played all year, and they might also be getting some guys back after that at the receiver position for Ohio State. But nothing about this, like the build up to this, the emotion that's involved in this, is like a negative for me. I think Ohio State kind of needs all of it, because it needs to expedite the process of finding it the best version of itself in this weird year, and I think this kind of stuff can help. So if I'm an Ohio State fan, like, I'm happy that all this is happening. I don't think it guarantees you anything, but if we're eager to see your team get past some of the ugliness of the Indiana and the Northwestern game and gel at the time that it absolutely needs to, I think, you know, Dabo ranking you 11th and talking shit about you is the kind of thing that can help get you there.
Yeah, I also we don't know what's going to happen off the game or whatever, but, like, I had a thought process while I was on the airplane yesterday, and I'm wondering, too, that, you know, Dabo is a character.
Yep.
Whether we, like, that's just, he is. Coaches are characters. He's a major one. I don't remember him being this much of a character before winning a national championship. I don't know if this is a career-long thing or if this is we're one of the best two programs in America. I can say whatever the hell I want. But I was also wondering in my mind, and maybe you can have an opinion about this, about whether or not this could be the beginning of the transformation of Ryan Day. Because I thought that we know how competitive he is. We've seen it. Everything that, you know, I went to New Hampshire and hung out with his family, and the only thing they ever talked about is that he was throwing tennis balls into a trash can in a hotel room before the TCU game when he was the interim head coach because he had to beat his brother at something before he went and coached his first college game.
Yeah.
He's very competitive, but I also think he's very vanilla in his press conferences. Mm-hmm. And like Urban, and I don't know that he's broken through that. When Urban spoke, it was an event. And I still remember getting ready for a press conference. Every time I asked Urban a question, I'd get nervous. You want to be the best. And it's like Ryan's just like, well. And it's just, I don't know if that locker room video that leaked is like the catalyst for that change. Because I feel like at a certain point, the head coach at Ohio State is going to have to be a little bit more animated. And I don't know, maybe that's an ill-advised criticism. Maybe you tell me what I think. I feel like if they beat Clemson, he could get up on the podium and like show who he actually is for the first time, because fans have not seen the Ryan Day that we've seen.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he's a different person when the doors are shut and you're in the Woody.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, that matters more, I think, for like the guy we're talking about has been present in that building, and I think the players see it and the recruits see it, which is why they're doing so well in those areas. But the public doesn't see it, and I think, I guess on some level that does matter. Like, if you're the head coach at Ohio State, you're kind of a standard bearer for the sport. Like, you're a spokesman for the sport, you're a face of the sport. And like Ryan Day, I think his name is growing in notoriety, certainly, but like you put him on a television screen, I don't think anyone recognizes him right away. And this probably isn't important to him, but there does feel like there's another step for him to take, sort of like in that regard. And Dabo has certainly done it. Nick Saban's been doing it for a decade. Those are probably the two. Urban was there before he retired, and like that's it. And like there's a void there that Ryan Day, I think, can step into if he wins this game. Like I don't think you do it. I don't think he's earned that yet. Like I think you have to earn that with your success on the field, and this is an opportunity to do that.
Yeah. I just like, I wonder, maybe if they lose, then he'll go back, and you know. But if they win, it would be awesome to see like a trend, because we've all expected it. Remember, like even like when we talked about when Ryan first took over, it's only a matter of time before, you know, you have to earn your right. You have to get to the stage where you are able to act the way that like Dabo acts. And you know what? I don't hate him for it. I love it. And I think he earned it. And yeah, if he's going to make the sport more interesting and if you're going to win the national championship, my viewpoint always has been, if you're upset about somebody talking shit, then beat them. Like, and be better. Like, I think that's the number one thing. Recruit better, coach better, pay more, make better facilities, invest more. You know, all the things that every program can do. If you're tired of Ohio State playing in the Big Ten championship or them changing the rules for Ohio State, then just be better. But it's just like now you're talking about a team that is a half step ahead of Ohio State. And, like, I don't know that Ohio State fans know how to react to that, because it's such a peculiar thing. I mean, Urban Meyer lost, what, 9 games in 7 years?
Mm-hmm.
And now you're talking about a team that could potentially beat them for the third time in 4 or 5. I don't remember what year that was. Was that 16? So was that 5 years ago?
Yeah.
So honestly, if you think about it, Clemson is about to beat Ohio State or might beat Ohio State for the third time, which would be a third of the entire loss total of Urban Meyer's 7-year tenure.
Yeah.
Like, that's like, you want to talk about rivalry games? That's, and a team that came in and took Jackson Carmen, and I know that's overblown, and it's probably something that doesn't even have to be written about anymore because we've covered it so extensively, but, like, they've done it at every turn. So if Dabo wants to rank Ohio State 11, you know what? Then go beat them.
Yeah,
don't get mad. Don't go and tweet. Just go beat them. Yeah. And, you know, maybe they will. I don't know.
Okay. Let's get into some other questions since we spent 30 minutes basically on one question. I'm going to skip around a little bit. Let's go to this one.
Can we just get to the good one?
Yeah, let's go to this one. Okay. From Chris B. Do you think the long throw against Indiana that was picked off broke Justin Fields? He hasn't been the same since. My contention is he played virtually flawless football all of last year and even the beginning of this year. He has not looked the same, not even close, since that pick in that game. I'm not sure you guys are even giving justice to how bad he played in the second half against Northwestern. He has it in him, but how confident are you that he can regain his confidence in 12 days?
I think that using the word broke just kind of like is the wrong word. But I think that, like, if you take the bones of the question, that he's might be onto something, because he hasn't been playing well. And I don't know if you put that on Justin Fields 100%. Maybe it was a poor game plan and the wrong play calls. And if you put a player in a position to not have success and I don't have it, then I don't know that I blame the player for that. And I don't know if that's like giving him a get out of jail free card, but he did have some inexplicable interceptions in the Indiana game. I don't know. He looked pretty good against Michigan State. I don't remember thinking, wow, there's a problem there. But again, that's not a team that I think can challenge you. And then you put yourself on a position where you can't get a touchdown against Northwestern, and you're, you know, not playing as well as you can, and you have to think, like, is this the quarterback that the entire car is built around, the engine of this program right now, and the team is sputtering. It needs an oil change.
Yeah.
And if you go into the playoff game thinking you're going to get a version of Justin Fields that resembles the one that played in Northwestern, Ohio State's going to get their doors blown off. But I don't know how much I put stock into whether or not the way he played against Northwestern is, you know, maybe the pick before halftime was a bad throw, or maybe, you know, he made some weird decisions or held onto the ball too long, which resulted in sacks. Like, there's things that you can do every game of the year that he plays in that you can break down and say, this wasn't very good. And Ryan Day and that coaching staff does that. But I don't know that I left the Northwestern game thinking, like, Justin Fields is, like, not playing well, and this is something that's going to be. And also, I think that it's possible, too, that his hand having that sprain was part of the reason for that. So, like, what do you think? Do you think it was a Justin Fields problem? Do you think it was a game plan problem? And where do you think he's going to be at by the time they take the field in New Orleans?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot. His thumb, we watched the game on Monday night, and his thumb he hurt with like 13 minutes left in the fourth quarter. I think he threw two or three other passes after that. So his thumb wasn't a thing that was impacting him for most of the game. The one thing in the question, he says, like, I don't think you guys are giving enough justice to how bad Justin played in the second half. He threw seven passes in the second half because they just started running the ball. He was 3 for 7. One incompletion was a pick where Jamison Williams broke off the route, and I think that's like a miscue with a receiver and a quarterback who aren't totally comfortable together. One incompletion was a touchdown to Garrett Wilson, where I didn't realize at the time, but like, Garrett Wilson got held by the defender. Otherwise, he would have caught it and he would have scored. It was a good throw. He threw a ball behind Trey Sermon. Like, I actually don't think he was terrible in the second half of that game. I thought he was fine in the second half of that game. So, but he is having a little bit, I think, of a crisis of confidence, and he doesn't see the field well enough. He has not grown enough in his ability to go through his progressions one year to the next. And I think you put that on him, certainly. You put that on Ryan Day. You put it on Corey Dennis, his new position coach. You know, if your players aren't progressing the way they're supposed to, that ultimately falls back on the coach. And I think the coaching of Justin Fields can be a little better. I think the play calling can help him. Like, some of these things, the play where he hurt his thumb, for instance, they're in the red zone, and they call it second and 11. They call a play action pass, and Northwestern doesn't bite, because why would you bite on a play action pass on second and 11? And the play call is an 8-man protection, two players in the route against seven defenders dropped in the zone coverage, because again, it's second and 11, and why would anybody bite on play action? Like, Justin Fields has no chance to complete a pass on that play. So he scrambles, he runs out of bounds, and he hurts his thumb. And it's like, you, Ryan Day, as a play caller, can put Justin Fields in much better situations than some of the situations you're putting him in now. That's only step one. Like, if you give Justin Fields play calls where there's a shot call, but it's not there, and there's underneath relief valves, like, he has to be able to see those and take those. And certainly he didn't do that enough against Northwestern. One play in particular, like, he didn't throw the ball to, I think it was Jeremy Ruckert, was like kind of sitting right in front of him over the ball wide open, and he didn't throw him the ball, and he took a sack. So there's a lot of things that go into this. I don't think Justin Fields is broken. I think he and Ryan Day need to, like, have a honest conversation about, like, the identity of this offense, and if it's just, like, we're chucking it deep no matter what, then, like, it's going to look like this. If there's something where both of them can get on the same page, or, like, it's okay to take checkdowns, it's okay to march the ball down the field a little bit, it's okay to rely on the running game and build a solid play-action passing game off of that, then I think there's something there. And, like, the fact that I said on the last episode, and I've said it before, like, he played his best, the best game of his career came against Clemson last year when he was a first-year starter. So I have confidence he can get it back. But, you know, there's work to do in 12 days. So is he broken? No, I don't think he's broken. I think he's still very talented. I think there's a lot for him to gain if he plays well against Clemson, both this year and for his future. But what he is right now certainly isn't good enough. He has to improve in the next 2 weeks.
Do you think that this – I still look up, you know, like last – what, Monday night, there was some weird thing that happened in the sky where Jupiter and –
something, yes, Jupiter and
something happened. I don't know. There's a lot of lights in Vegas, so I didn't really look up there. Yeah. But I sometimes look out into the heavens and think, what are the odds that two of the best quarterbacks in the history of college football maybe were born like within a 30-mile radius of each other and played high school football during the same year at the same time, and like now are going to be playing each other for the second time, and like what are the odds of that? And yeah. I was like wondering, do you think that Fields thinks about the head-to-head matchup stuff with Trevor? Do you think he actually wants to beat him at something once? Because he lost at the opening. Oh, no, he won the opening, right? Yeah, he won the opening. Okay, so he beat him at the opening. But, like, I mean, I filed my Heisman ballot on Monday, and one person was on my ballot and one wasn't.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the person who wasn't, I don't know if I'm not allowed to say this or not, but Fields was not on my ballot.
I think you can say who you didn't vote for, but you can't say who you voted for.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Fields was not on my ballot, and part of it was because they didn't play enough games, and part of it was his two worst games were Ohio State's two biggest games.
Yeah.
And you can't win the trophy playing like that. That doesn't mean I don't think he's one of the best players in college football. I still do, but that's not what the trophy's about. And I just wonder, like, if he just wants to actually – if he's motivated by the fact that he is constantly compared to that person, and he will for the remainder of his career. If Lawrence goes Jaguars because the Jets decided to win a game for no reason on Sunday, which is something I still think about, and he goes to the Jets with the second pick, this is going to be a side-by-side graphic in the NFL for years to come. And I feel like he wants to win this game for that reason, too.
Yeah, I think he's pressed a little bit, like and I don't know if that's because like he had fewer games and he wanted to win the Heisman, or he had fewer games and he wanted to make sure that Ohio State got into the playoffs, so he wanted to blow everybody out. But like I thought last year and coming into this year, like one of the qualities of Justin Fields that didn't get talked about enough, but I thought was like super important to the way that he plays, is just sort of like his general unflappability. Like he was a very cool kind of under pressure. I don't mean pressure in the sense of like getting pressure by defensive players. I mean pressure like of the moment. And against Indiana, I don't know who that guy was against Indiana. Some of the stuff he was trying to do, and then like he showed up for a second against Northwestern. I was like, oh man, this is not great. And I would be a little fearful, I guess, that guy might show back up again against Clemson, because Clemson's certainly going to blitz him. It's a huge stage. He's going to have to make a lot of plays. A lot's riding on his shoulders. But if he can somehow like get back into and channel the guy who was like never able to get knocked off kilter in that kind of way, then I think he's going to have a good game. And I think if he's that guy, Ohio State can win. But I don't know why. I think he struggled a little bit with the all the things I guess that were riding on his shoulder. Like we talked about coming into the year, like is he going to be the best Ohio State quarterback ever? Is this going to be the best Ohio State offense ever? And it's like, I'm not making excuses for him because they had the potential and they didn't quite reach it. But it's a lot to handle, and maybe at times he didn't handle it all that well. But that doesn't mean that he can't find it against Clemson. I kind of think he will find it, to be honest. But it's not a guarantee. So I get why people will be nervous about it. But he's not broken.
Yeah.
I respect the spirit of the question for sure, because
yeah, it was a good question.
He's lost a little something of himself for sure, but I don't
I'm not going to get mad at somebody for using hyperbole either. So yeah, like, I mean, yeah. I go to that well quite often. So yeah, I appreciate the question.
There were like some personnel questions. Will W asked, like, should DeJuan Jones be playing left guard instead of Harry Miller? And Anthony V asked, should Justin Hilliard be starting a linebacker now and, like, maybe move Baron Browning to inside and replace Tough Borland? Where do you sit on making personnel changes 2 weeks before a playoff game?
Baron Browning was playing pretty well, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, I know Justin Hilliard had a nice game, but I don't know that I would make any of those changes. Neither of them.
Sticking in a new offensive lineman is potentially disastrous. Although, like, DeJuan Jones played well at tackle against Michigan State. Harry Miller's not had a good year. His mistakes are very apparent. He's a very young starting offensive lineman. He's been their worst offensive lineman, but I think he's had bright spots too. But he did have he had a holding penalty that took a touchdown off the board against Northwestern. He had another play where he just, like, didn't block anybody when they were trying to do a throwback to Garrett Wilson, and that play fell apart. So, like, I get it. Again, I think that goes back to play calling. Like, maybe don't put your worst offensive lineman on an island to block two people near the sideline while Justin Fields is trying to throw the ball back across the field to Garrett Wilson. So, like, put your players in better spots, Ryan Day. Please put your players in better spots. And then don't fall back on saying, well, we got to execute better. It's like, no, just call better plays. Like, have a better plan. It's not only them executing. It's also you putting your players in bad situations.
Yeah.
But I don't think they're going to make any personnel changes now. I think, like, Justin Hilliard could play more. Tough Borland did not play well against Northwestern. Like you said, Baron Browning had been playing very well. We also don't know if Baron Browning is going to be back for the playoff game. The Big Ten did change that rule from 21 days to 17 days. I don't know if we mentioned that on the last episode or not. I don't know if that had happened by then. But we don't know when Baron Browning went out, or if he was out for a positive or he was out for contact tracing. But if he's available, I would expect him to start at Sam linebacker. Maybe Justin Hilliard could work in a little bit. But I don't think they're going to shuffle the deck here and start putting new starters in there before you go into a playoff game.
Justin Hilliard the best Justin on the field in the Big Ten title game, playing himself into an NFL spot?
I don't know about playing himself into an NFL spot. I just don't know if he has, like, enough film for that. But he was really good. Like, he was their best defensive player. Maybe Haskell Garrett or Tommy Togiai, which is usually the case. But
you want to
he was really good.
See, I want to see him succeed, because that's a guy.
That interception was great. Like, the play he made on the ball, that interception.
Climbed the ladder really on that one, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, I was sitting next to Austin Ward in the press box from Letterman Row, and, like, we see Justin Hilliard isolated outside on the tight end, and Austin said, like, well, this could get ugly. And it's like, nope. Justin Hilliard.
Which interception was more impressive, Hilliard's, or based on his physical or supposed physical limitations, or the one that Northwestern got before halftime?
The one that Northwestern got before halftime was a big deal. And that actually leads me nicely into another question that was here. From Adam V, said, was Chris Olave missed that much, or are there bigger reasons to be concerned about the passing game? And I don't think it's one or the other, but, like, that play in particular is a good example of the ball in the end zone. They kind of ran a switch with Wilson and Jameson Williams, and I think if Chris Olave is in that spot, he runs the route in the way that gets a pick on the defender that was covering Garrett Wilson, and Jameson Williams didn't do that. So the Brandon Joseph, the safety who was covering Garrett Wilson, like, never broke stride, was with Garrett Wilson the whole way. It wasn't a great ball. It should have been thrown a little higher. But, like, that's where you miss Chris Olave when Jameson Williams doesn't set the right pick. You miss Chris Olave when Jameson Williams breaks off of his route because he's near the sideline with nowhere else to go, and Justin Fields throws an interception. Like, those, I'm not taking those off of Justin's shoulders, but you did miss Chris Olave. Like, he's a major security blanket for Justin Fields. So his return, we're anticipating, I think, solves not all of the issues, but some of the issues in the passing game. But it's a combination of both. But I don't want that personnel loss of Chris Olave to just sort of get, like, washed away and forgotten about. I think that was a major deal that he wasn't playing in that game.
Yeah, I agree with you. And also the way that Northwestern was defending them, I don't know. You know, again, it's all same discussion points that we had from after the game.
Yeah. Cullen B. says, or asks, no coach has won a national title while calling plays since Steve Spurrier. The job is too complicated these days. This is why the Buckeyes are slow to pick up on in-game adjustments. Is it time for Ryan Day to become a true CEO and let Kevin Wilson call plays so that Day can run the whole team? I don't know. Running the whole team seems more complicated than just calling the plays. I get where he's coming from. I also don't know.
I don't know how you can answer the question without knowing exactly how he feels. You know, like,
yeah.
I mean, I know Kevin Wilson's a hell of a play caller. I'd let that guy call plays. And I understand that if he's out talking to if Ryan Day's talking to special teams or having a discussion with Kerry Combs, and like, you're not as locked in on adjustments and all the things that you could if the only thing that you were concerned with was being the offensive coordinator. So I understand. This is a sentiment that this was going back to should Urban call plays. You know, I mean, this isn't new. And it's just a matter of whether or not, I mean, because most coaches go for the year, first year or two. And you know, you wrote the story about him at the Rose Bowl a few years ago. He doesn't want to pass the sticks. I get it. But, you know, maybe he will. And I'm not saying that he should based on that game. I mean, the guy's lost one game in his entire coaching career at this point, head coaching career. And it was to Clemson in a very heartbreaking fashion. So I don't know. If this is like knee-jerk reaction to the way things went after the Big Ten championship game, I think that's one thing. The only reason why I would ever think about this question or feel this question is whether or not Ryan Day feels that way.
Yeah, and I don't know if he does, and he's close with Chip Kelly, and Chip Kelly calls his own plays. The one thing about this question, and like Urban, I think Urban is the one who has gone like on TV and said like no play callers won a national title since Steve Spurrier. It's like, well, Urban had a very heavy hand in play calling, and he won national titles. Didn't Jim Tressel call plays? Like, I know Jim Bowman was the offensive coordinator, but wasn't Tressel calling plays in 2002?
I always knew that Tressel was the one who was, like, above everybody. I don't know if he was technically calling the plays. Like, Tressel was like Urban in the sense that he what he wanted happened. And I don't know, like, Jim Bowman at one point, if I remember correctly. I mean, man, we're going over a decade ago. But I think that Bowman was the play caller, and there was a play that called Dave.
Yeah,
I don't know if you've seen all the memes about power Dave, and it's just like there was a bunch of before memes were the thing. Like everybody would make jokes about Dave.
Yeah,
and I don't know if Jim Tressel was the full time play caller in 2002. I can't recall, but I don't know that Ryan Day calling the plays makes me think, wow, Ohio State's in trouble.
Well, right? That was what I was getting to, I guess. It's like, if Jim Tressel wasn't calling plays, he at least had a heavy hand in it. Like, Les Miles had a heavy hand in calling plays at LSU, and they won a national title. It's like, part of the reason why people pull out this stat that, like, there hasn't been a national championship head coach since Steve Spurrier is because, like, Nick Saban has won half the national championship since then. And, like, Bob Stoops is a defensive guy, and he won one. So, like, it's a little bit of a flawed point, I think. And also, like, I think two of the last three Super Bowl winners, the head coach has been primary play caller. So, like, you can win a championship while with your head coach serving as a primary play caller. I know college and NFL are a little different, but it's not impossible. I don't think it's a thing that's holding Ohio State back. I do think over time, maybe inevitably, coaches sort of evolve more into CEOs. And I understand the reluctance to, like, give this up if it's what you do. But I don't know if, like, to this point, I felt like, oh, man, Ryan Day's got to hand the reins over because he's putting Ohio State in a bad spot. I mean, ask me again, I guess, after the Clemson game. But I don't think we've reached the point where Ryan Day needs to give it up completely.
Yeah, agreed.
Okay, let's do two more questions. This one was – I like this question. From Brandon L. He said, this matchup is a tougher one to view through scarlet-colored glasses. One thing I come back to, though, is – as we talk about how deficient and worse this team is than previous iterations, OSU teams in the past that seem most obviously equipped to win it all fell short. And then he says the weirdo sicko Ohio State teams have won it all. And he's pointing to 2002, 2014. Yeah. And then he says, this is a weirdo sicko, unknown, seemingly deficient team. Is there anything to this, or am I taking a 2018 OSU linebacker angle on a Maryland running back with this take?
Brandon L., you looking for a job, bud? I think that would be a really interesting story for you to work on.
Yeah, I saw this question too, and it piqued my interest. I have to go back.
I don't know
the makeup of all the teams that he's mentioning. I have to go back, and maybe you know better than I do. But yeah,
2003, Ohio State lost to 2003. The one team that he doesn't have on there for some reason is 05. 05 lost twice, once to Penn State, and was the team that lost to Texas at home.
Yeah.
The year that Texas beat USC in the national championship game at a tight end, Ryan Hamby, ball hit him in the hands, and they would have put him up 9 late in the fourth quarter, and that would have basically sealed it. And then they had a weird loss at Penn State. But by the time the end of the 05 team, 06 isn't on there. Oh, yeah, it is on there. Okay. But the 05 team is what gave birth to the 06 team. And I bet you, maybe with the benefit of hindsight, the 06 team that lost to Florida in the national championship wasn't as good as the team that Ohio State fielded at the end of 05. Like, 05 I would put on that list along with 06. 03, they lost to Michigan. That would have sent them to the championship for the second consecutive year. 2013 was the year they lost to Michigan State in the Big Ten championship game. And, you know, 2015, you were there. Yeah, I didn't invent hip hop, but I was there. So if you go back and you look at Ohio State's last 20 years, there were legitimately five teams, five. So 20% of the time that they had a team that could win a national title and they didn't.
Yeah.
And, like, you start propping up Alabama for winning all those national championships. Like, that is Alabama territory. And, you know, some years you're going to win it and some years you're not. But if Ohio State won three of those and then sprinkles in 2002 and 2014, you know, you put yourself in a position where you're in a different viewing, you're a different light from viewership. So I think that's really interesting. It's like I was talking to somebody who was an Ohio State fan last week, and he was just like, they're going to get their ass kicked by Clemson. It's just like, what did you think that was going to happen in 14 when they played Bama?
Yeah.
I bet your analysis was very similar. And I'm not trying to use that as, like, upsets happen, because of course they do. That's not deep analysis. But I think sometimes you overanalyze teams and you overthink about things and you look at something that happened in a previous week and you think to yourself, well, they suck because their linebackers are out of position and their secondary is going to get eaten alive and the left guard can't block anybody and all the things that you come up with. And it's just like sometimes the analysis is just Ohio State's offensive line can blow them off the ball all game like Notre Dame did 6 weeks ago and put up 300 yards rushing again and beat them. And it's like you can think about the 900 reasons why they might lose, but the one thing that you might not give credit for because you're upset right now is the thing that ends up winning the football game. So I think that talking to a few – I mean, that would be a major, major project. I don't even know if you'd have time. But, like, talking to players from all those teams about what went wrong and talking to – I mean, I think that's a – like, Brandon, your question is – what we spend time at home doing all day.
Yeah.
Coming up with interesting, fascinating discussions. And, like, the weirdo, sicko, unknown, seemingly deficient team is 6-0 and playing in the champion college football playoff. And Ohio State was super deficient in 14, too. They had a third-string quarterback playing in the postseason.
Yeah.
And, you know,
it's weird. It's weird how this team has evolved, because before the year, before all this craziness happened, we were, like, Ryan Day, like, called this once-in-a-lifetime team. We were all thinking about all the records this offense could shatter, and, like, it had the makeup of a team that you thought was going to be awesome, like, in every facet, and then ultimately disappoint you, because that's what Ohio State's best teams do. And it's morphed into something different now. Like, it's a flawed team. You think they're going to get their ass kicked by Clemson, and it's like, if in 21 days or 22 days we're going to look at, like that team won the national title. Like, yeah, that's the team that won the national title. The one that had very obvious flaws is the team that won the national title, because that's what Ohio State does.
Yeah, well, I mean, teams have flaws in a pandemic, and Ohio State's not alone in that regard. So, yeah. I mean, I think if Ohio State would have beaten Northwestern 48-10, that question wouldn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it would still be the same team. And I think Ohio State could have won that game 48-10. They almost covered the spread by playing 3.5 quarters of I don't know what we're doing football and still ended up winning that football game. So they're not my favorite. I think they're the third best team in the playoff right now, but the third best team can win sometimes.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm very excited to see what Ryan Day puts out there, because I think we're going to learn a lot about him as a coach, his personality, what this Ohio State team actually is, because it's hard to gauge through the prism of coronavirus, 35-7 blown leads to Indiana. I don't even know how to put it into proper context, because they haven't had a game against a team that I would even come close to even putting in Clemson's stratosphere. So, interesting dynamic for sure. And sometimes the team that you think are bulletproof are the ones that lose, and sometimes the teams that are flawed are the ones that wins. I think it's an insightful question, and I think it's something to think about as you go into the game.
Yeah, and it's not like Ohio State's not like some scrappy underdog, but typically, like, the teams that people give no shot to are the ones that end up surprising you. I think,
it just stinks for Ohio State that they have the second best quarterback in college football, and the bar for being the best quarterback in college football might have never been higher, and they're playing that team.
Yeah, right.
So, like, you're in a position where you have to overcome some things, but
I mean, again, I haven't given my official prediction yet, but if somebody's giving Ohio State two scores, just take my money.
Yeah, right. Okay, let's end on this question from Nathan K. This is more of a fun question. He says, first he asked, is the intro song available anywhere? Because his two-year-old loves it. People love the intro song to this podcast. That's the question I get asked the most, is where's the music come from? Our producer, John Hayes, picks it. We'll find a link if we can get that out to you. He asked, what was the Christmas present you got that you were most excited for as a kid? Or it doesn't have to be a Christmas present, I guess. Like any present you were given around the holidays that got you most excited as a kid.
Can we also do adult?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Okay, we'll go kid first. I got Super Nintendo in 1995, I think. I don't remember what year I came out. And my grandma was in town visiting. And they put Super Nintendo underneath the tree. There was no tree. We're Jewish. Yeah. But there were... I'm just trying to be the symbolization here. That was the most epic gift I've ever received and will ever receive, because when you're a kid, these things that happen are so much bigger than real life. Like, when we opened me and my brother opened that gift, I've never in my life, I don't think I'll ever be that jubilant again.
Was it like the video of that kid that got the N64, like that commercial that people...
Dude, and we played it and played it and played it. Like, we got Mario. Him and I would play it all day. And I don't know if that's part of the reason, like, for the decay of modern society, because that's all we did when we were kids. But that was the best... No gift could ever top that, because when you're a kid, receiving the new video game system is, like, the apex of human happiness.
I don't know if I ever got a system... for Christmas. I definitely got games for Christmas, but I think I might have already had the systems beforehand. But I think the gift that I got for Christmas, I might have been like six. So this would have been like 95-ish too, I think. I got a Huffy bike. Like, it was an orange Huffy bicycle, and it was the fastest goddamn bike on the planet. Like, I was flying on it.
No, you were fast. You were fast.
No, the bike was fast. The bike had speed. That was... I got on that thing, and I was like a superhuman. Like, the thing flew down the driveway, and it was one of those things too where, like, I didn't like, I had a bike that had training wheels on it, and like, this was like my first like real bike that didn't have training wheels on it, but like, I had never really ridden on a bike without training wheels all that much, and like, I got on the bike and my dad just pushed me down the driveway or the alleyway behind our house, and it was over after that. We were flying all around the neighborhood. I love that bike.
I have this memory when I was a kid learning to ride bikes. My dad took off the training wheels. And, like, we lived in a house that had a curvy street, so that if you rode up the street and, like, you know, 400 feet, you were no longer visible from the person standing on the front driveway. And I remember my parents saying, when you drive your bike or ride your bike, don't you dare go into the street. And I remember thinking, with the bike that I had that was fast, the second I got out of sight, I always, every time, went right into the middle of the street. And I don't know why, like, that's just like kids, but like, I almost felt like I was being set free by the tyranny of my parents thinking that they could keep me out of the street. Okay, I'm going to do my favorite adult gift, and I'm going to do it from this year.
All right.
My girlfriend bought me Tommy John underwear.
Oh yeah,
I don't know if you've ever...
I have heard about it.
It's called Second Skin, and this isn't an ad read, guys. This is a pro tip. I think it's like $35 for a pair of underwear, so it's kind of expensive. But I'm never wearing, like, this is going to be a thing for me. Like, I'm going to constantly add, you know, maybe not all at once, because I can't justify spending $350 on 10 pairs of underwear. But I think that, like, over time, if you buy them incrementally, like one pair a month, get yourself... It was life-changing. And the funny thing is, before we came to Vegas for Christmas, because it's where she's from, I ordered a PS5 from GameStop, and I risked my life breaking breaking crosswalk rules and running red lights to get to GameStop. And I've been waiting for my PS5, and the second we left the house and went to the airport, the thing arrived. And I bring that up because... gifts that you get yourself that would have been epic when you were 5 or 8 or 10 just don't hit the same as they would have when you were a kid. Not that I'm not excited to play it, but getting PS5 doesn't even come close to the excitement that I experienced the day I got Super Nintendo.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's not the same thing.
Dude, Second Skin, though. Try it, Bill.
Second Skin, Tommy John. Not an ad. Shout out
to Tommy John. Are you on their website right now?
No, I'm looking. I'm trying to find a picture of the bike that I got when I was a kid in 1995, but I can't find it. I don't know if I... Like, I only ever get, like, money now that I'm an adult. I can't think of a cool gift that I've gotten since I've been an adult. One year... I guess I was an adult when this happened. This is more like of a like a sentimental thing. It was just like a nice thing my grandmother did for me. When I went to a Phillies game in, I don't know what year it was, and Kevin Millwood threw like a no-hitter, and I was at that game, and I always kept scoring. I was a kid when I went to games, so like I had the scorecard from that game, and then I was like able to get it autographed by Kevin Millwood like a few months after that, and I just like had it sitting there, and unbeknownst to me, like my grandmother like got a hold of that scorecard and then like put it in a frame with like photos from that game and like gave it to me. It was kind of cool. I still have it. It's in my.
I'm legitimately about to cry.
Yeah, it was nice. Another gift
I'm
I got.
I'm out here playing grab ass about new underwear and you're over here trying to break people down.
Yeah, another gift I got. This will really break you down. This is actually gonna be sad. I hesitate to say this, but it is nice. It means a lot to me. It's hanging up in my living room. My family lived on the same street in Philadelphia. Like a member of my family lived on the same street in Philadelphia for like 70 years. My grandparents lived there. My dad grew up on that block, and then we lived on that block. And then no one, like, we all moved. Like, no one lived on that block anymore after my mom passed away. And my dad, like, took a picture of the front door of our house and, like, a picture of the street sign that I also have tattooed on my arm and, like, framed all of that, like, a really nice way and gave it to us, like, when no one in my family lived on that block anymore. So that was a really cool, like, sentimental gift that I have hanging in my living room at the moment.
I'm, like, actually about to... I'm done. Just... End this shit. I mean, what are you doing to me?
Sorry, someone asked.
I'm talking about Tommy John underwear.
Underwear is nice too. Underwear is nice too. Like I get it.
No, I know, but I'm not saying. I just that was touching. I don't like that was. I don't.
Yeah, I just wanted to answer the question honestly. So anyway, I mean, the bike was cooler when I was a kid. The bike was cooler.
Landis, you got to end this. I'm about to go get it. I need a tissue.
Okay. All right. We'll end it there. Thank you guys for listening again. Subscribe to The Athletic. You can subscribe to theathletic.com/4-6. Get that 2-for-1 deal. You can ask questions for future episodes. We hope everybody enjoys the holiday week. Stay safe. We'll be back to talk with you guys after that. We'll preview Ohio State Clemson a little more. Maybe try to sneak in an extra show next week before Ohio State and Clemson play each other down in New Orleans. But until then, thanks again for listening. We'll talk to you guys next week.